Part 2. Work or Career History. Jeffrey Dahmer graduated from high school, went to college, served in the military, worked in a sandwich shop, a blood bank, and then in a chocolate factory, all while sustaining a low profile as he drugged, abused, and eventually killed his lovers. Here is a detailed recollection of the work he did during his lifetime. Nursery, 1972. 12-year-old Jeff Dahmer got a job at a local nursery selling shrubbery. His boss described him as very enthusiastic. There is limited information on this job, but perhaps this job inspired his love of plants, which was evident by the plants that were found thriving throughout his apartment in Milwaukee almost 2 decades later. Note, the FBI files show that he was listed in employment with the W.R. Grayson Company in Ohio, which could have been this company or the recruitment agency that helped him to get a temporary job there. Revere High School, class of 78. Jeff attended Revere High School in Bath, Ohio from September 1975 until he graduated in May of 1978. While he became known as the class clown, he was an outcast and a loner, using alcohol to transform into the charismatic and silly boy that everyone got to know at school. He got acquainted with a group of male classmates who enjoyed his pranks, fake seizures, and odd sense of humor. They eventually formed what they called the Dahmer Fan Club, where they raised money to pay him to behave wildly, put on dramatic performances, harass people at the mall, and make them all laugh. Being paid for entertainment is an interesting element when considering how Dahmer offered to pay his victims to entertain him. His pranks became known as doing a Dahmer, something that took a dark turn once classmates saw their old friend on the news once he had been captured. Interestingly, the seizures and strange physiology that he entertained people with was mostly based on his own mother's behavior, who was known to be a hypochondriac who had fits of anxiety and performed strange acts while Jeff was growing up. This was his way of coping with her neglect and making something silly out of it instead of showing the world how much pain he was in. Jeff Backdurf, who is known for creating the critically acclaimed graphic novel that has since been turned into a film of the same name, My Friend Dahmer, was one of the friends in this fan club, as was Mark Cookrell and Neil Davis. Dahmer also had a friend named Jeff Six, who was sadistic and liked to kill or harm animals intentionally, which he did not like. But the two biked, attended concerts, and drank together, so it was a better fit than most. Backdurf recalls how each friend had reached a point where they knew that Dahmer was really weird. For example, seeing the animal bones and remains that he was collecting and preserving with his dad's chemicals. Observing how much his drinking increased and became out of control, and watching as Dahmer slipped into a dark and lonely world in plain sight, without teachers or parents intervening. One of his classmates, Martha Schmidt, recalled how Jeff had told her that sometimes he refused to answer his phone at home because he did not want to be enslaved by it like Pavlov's dog, that when the bell rang, he would never just drop everything and run to answer it. She later learned that the real reason he did not answer the phone at home was because he was given clear instructions by his mother not to, when she abandoned him to start her own new life in Chippewa Falls. His whole explanation that sounded so intellectual and logical was actually total bullshit, she said during an interview. Dahmer was a master of deceit, craftily twisting information to make himself look and feel better instead of being vulnerable about the struggles in his life. On a field trip to Washington, D.C., Dahmer had managed to convince the entire class's way into the vice president's office, demonstrating his ability to manipulate others. He said that they were journalists working for the school newspaper, The Lantern, which was the one he had worked on in his junior year. He was tremendously charming and persuasive, even at a young age, and enjoyed being cocky around others just to prove a point. One of the most memorable moments in his high school yearbook was when he got the fan club to sneak him into every group photo that had been taken, including the National Honor Society group photo. When the teacher spotted him in it, where he certainly did not belong, she blacked out his face with a permanent marker before the yearbook got printed, which is a haunting portrayal of a young boy looking to be noticed. He was featured as a headless torso in the yearbook, which is interesting when considering that he became obsessed with decapitating his victims and keeping their heads for sentimental value. Before he graduated, he attended his prom with a 16-year-old girl by the name of Bridget Geiger, who was friends with some of his friends. According to Geiger, Dahmer was very courteous throughout the evening, but seemed terrified of affection or the thought of kissing. Because of his anxiety, he fled the event for a while to get his own food from McDonald's, which he ate in his dad's borrowed car, and was not allowed back into the building on his return because the doorman suspected that he had been out to get alcohol. Geiger recalled that the last time she saw him was at his house, where he had invited several friends over for a séance. She left out of fear and never saw Dahmer again. These friends included Mike Koslow, who suggested the séance, Jeff Six, Wally Scoof, and a few others. They had attempted to make paranormal contact with a woman who had committed suicide in the woods behind Jeff's house, even driving to the cemetery that night to visit her grave. Once Dahmer had graduated from high school, he never saw any of his friends again. They wondered about him from time to time, and often laughed about some of his antics. But he did not feel the need to stay in contact with any of them, describing himself as a loner. He killed his first victim 3 weeks after graduating. Ohio State University, August to December 1978. At the end of July 1978, 6 weeks after Dahmer had murdered and discarded of Stephen Hicks, his father returned to the family home to find him living there alone. Jeff had no contact with his high school friends and spent his days drinking by himself, sleeping and watching television, drowning the flashbacks that nobody would even know about until 1991. Lionel Dahmer had met Sherry, who had become his stepmother, and the pair were shocked to find that Jeff's mother, Joyce, had left him abandoned at the house, only taking his 12-year-old brother with her as she moved to Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin, without telling anyone. She had full custody of David Dahmer, but because Jeff was already 18, she did not have to take responsibility for him. The divorce was finalized on July 24th, 1978. But Joyce had already left town, leaving Jeff with no food, no money, and a broken refrigerator. His father thought it would be good for Jeff to enroll in college and helped him to get started at Ohio State University by the following month, in August 1978. He enrolled in studies in administrative science, classical civilizations, and an introduction to anthropology, and stayed on the 13th floor in the Morrell Tower, reportedly in dormitory room number 541. After 3 months of drinking, bunking class, and sleeping his time away, he was expelled. When he had run out of the money that his father had given him to live on, he fueled his alcoholism by selling his own blood at the South Campus Blood Bank. Students at OSU have described his dormitory room as haunted, telling ghost stories of the serial killer who once occupied it. During his time at college, Dahmer made no friends and was even accused of stealing from his roommates. He was a complete loner after high school and spent his short time at college drinking himself into a stupor and agitating students, staff, and the campus police. According to students during his time, he drank whatever he could get his hands on: beer, wine, gin, and whiskey. His father gave him a heartfelt surprise visit on one occasion, but found Jeff passed out in his room, surrounded by liquor bottles. Shortly after arriving back home, his disappointed father gave him an ultimatum to either get a job or join the army. Lionel Dahmer took his son to AA meetings and signed him up for therapy, but it did not seem to have any impact on Jeff. He was dropped off at an employment services office in Ohio, but found his way to a bar instead and got arrested on drunk and disorderly charges later that day. Lionel was at a loss and took his son to a local recruiting station to enlist him in the U.S. Army for the new year. U.S. Army, December 1978 to March 1981. On the 29th of December 1978, Lionel took Jeff to the Army recruitment offices and enlisted him for 3 years of service. On his application form, Jeff wrote his stepmother's name in as his mother, which the Army noted had differed from his birth certificate. He stated that he had never engaged in homosexual activity, that he suffered from hay fever, wore glasses, had a hernia operation when he was 4 years old, and that his only run-in with the law was a ticket for $20 for driving left of center. By January 1979, Jeff Dahmer was officially in the U.S. Army, stationed at Fort McClellan, Alabama. Due to his drinking problem, he often caused his entire platoon to receive additional physical training and punishment. For this, Dahmer was eventually beaten up by two fellow soldiers, which caused a concussion and fractured his left eardrum. After 2 days in hospital, he was returned to the barracks, but his performance did not improve. After failing his initial training, he was transferred to Fort Sam Houston, Texas, for 6 weeks to train as a medic, which he succeeded at. According to his father, he returned a fine physical specimen and looked happy, fit, and back on track in his life. He graduated successfully from the program and was transferred to the 2nd Battalion, 68th Armored Regiment, 8th Infantry Division in Baumholder, West Germany. While reports have shown that his performance was average or above average as a soldier in his first year, his roommate and fellow soldiers have painted a different picture. According to them, Dahmer drank incessantly and beat, tortured, and raped his roommate, Billy Joe Capshaw, for the entire time that he was there. Preston Davis, another soldier, recounts Dahmer drugging and assaulting him and said that he was a racist and a monster whenever he drank. Dahmer discovered gay pornographic videos for the first time in Germany and spent hundreds of dollars on his collection. He told police that he had spent thousands of dollars on gay pornography by the time he was caught. He had initially not located any of this content in Milwaukee, but soon learned where to get his hands on it. He told detectives that he did not commit any offenses during his time in Germany because he kept himself satisfied with pornography, masturbation, and because he enjoyed the structure that the army offered. However, we know that he satisfied himself with far more than this, and that he had raped and tortured fellow soldiers and was even suspected of murdering and dismembering people in the vicinity. This was never proven. He traveled on several occasions while in Germany, even attending Oktoberfest for 3 days in Munich in 1980. He completed 2 months of training in Landstuhl, Germany, which is approximately 30 miles from Baumholder, and enjoyed going for dinner in Idar Oberstein, a village 10 miles away. Dahmer told detectives that the first time he had experienced sexual advances from another male was in Germany, when a sergeant major invited him back to his house for a party. He obliged, and when they arrived, saw that there was no one else there. They smoked marijuana, and the sergeant took a shower, coming out naked and hopping into bed, inviting Dahmer to join him. He said, "No thanks," and recalled staggering out high from the good hash and headed back to his barracks. Dahmer liked to be in control and always rejected being pursued, rather being the hunter in every sexual scenario. In March of 1981, due to his persistent drinking and deteriorating performance, he was found unfit for military service and received an honorable discharge from the army. On March 24, 1981, he flew to Fort Jackson, where his debriefing was held. The army provided him with a ticket to anywhere in the country from there, with Dahmer choosing Miami as his next destination because he could not bear to face his father. Police reports say that his grandmother bought this ticket, but the more likely possibility is that the army provided it and Dahmer avoided telling any family members about his 6-month early discharge. Sunshine Subs, April to September 1981. When Dharma arrived in Miami, he had limited money and plenty of time. He searched for a job along the coast and eventually landed one at Sunshine Subs, a sandwich shop in a strip mall on Collins Avenue. The supervisor, Ken Halpert, had spotted Dharma digging for food in the dumpster behind the shop and offered him a job, especially after learning about his recent discharge from the military. He had a variety of positions, cook, cashier, and cleaner, and worked 10 to 12 hour days at least 6 days a week. According to FBI files, Dharma said that he was paid under the table to still be able to collect his unemployment funds from the downtown Miami office. He afforded a hotel room for about 2 weeks, after which he ran out of money and had to sleep on the beach. He said he hated it so much that he would drink excessively until 3 in the morning to try to shorten the time he had to spend alone on the beach. He told police that he once got mugged on the beach while he was sleeping, losing $100, and that he almost got knifed when approaching his usual sleeping spot, where a group of men had gathered and did not know what his intentions were. He had a white female colleague with an English accent that he was acquainted with. They went to dinner on several occasions, walked on the beach, and discussed her desire for a green card. At one point, Dharma had even considered marrying her to help her out. But because he was not attracted to women and could not imagine a woman as a life partner, he did not encourage the conversation further. Once he was back in Ohio, he received a few letters from her, but never responded because he was not interested in her. According to reports, Dharma found a dead body in the dumpster on the 7th of July 1981 and told his supervisor that he had been stepping over it all morning while taking out the trash. The identity of the body has never been confirmed, but the incident was investigated and filed by the police. Once he had saved up some income, he rented a room at the Bimini Bay Motel for about $400 a night, which had a fridge, TV, and bathroom. He drank a whole bottle of grasshopper liquor on the first night there and had to call the motel doctor for some help. Sometimes he was forced to spend additional nights on the beach when he ran out of money, and one night when he had passed out, woke up to find a rat crawling over him, which freaked him out so much that he called his father in a panic and begged him for some money. Lionel denied him money, but did offer him a ticket home, which he accepted. 2 weeks after arriving back home, he was arrested for drunk and disorderly conduct and given a 10-day suspended jail sentence, which included a $60 fine. His father made every attempt to help his son overcome alcoholism, which included seeing psychologists and church counselors. He spent a total of 4 months back in Bath, Ohio, before his father decided to send him to West Ellis to live with his mother, Catherine Dharma, which was Jeff's paternal grandmother. Milwaukee Blood Plasma Center, 1982. Once Dharma had settled in with his grandmother in West Ellis, he regularly attended church and started getting his life back together. He managed to secure a job as a phlebotomist at the Milwaukee Blood Plasma Center, which earned him an income for 10 months before he was laid off. He used his skills as a field medic in the army to get this job, which meant that he required no training to do it and was hired on the spot. Dr. Park Dietz, the final prosecution witness at the trial, testified that Dharma drank a vial of blood while working at the blood plasma center, just for the strange excitement and to see how it tasted. Dharma apparently did not like the taste and spat it out. On August 7, 1982, he was arrested and convicted for indecent exposure at the Wisconsin State Fair, where he exposed himself to a group of 25 women and children. He was fined $50 and got a criminal record. This could have led to him being laid off, but there is no certainty about how or why he lost his job at the plasma center. Unemployed, January 1983 to January 1985. Once Dharma had lost his job at the blood plasma center, he resorted to drinking excessively again and remained unemployed for 2 years while living off his grandmother, who was 79 to 81 years old at the time. She gave him chores to do, such as gardening, painting, and helping around the house. And while it helped him for a while, it was just not enough purpose to keep him from his excessive drinking habits. Ambrosia Chocolate Company, 1985 to 1991. Dahmer's contract work as a mixer at the Ambrosia Chocolate Company in Milwaukee started on January 14, 1985, where he worked 6 nights a week, usually from 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. He earned $8.75 per hour, which was almost 3 times minimum wage at the time. Shortly after he was hired, he was approached by a stranger in the West Allis Library and received a note in his lap, which offered him sexual favors in the second-floor bathroom. This incident stirred up his urges for dominance and control that he had been successfully suppressing for a while. And while he did not meet up with a man, he did start frequenting adult bookstores, gay bars, and gay bathhouses. On one occasion, he hid in a department store until they closed and stole a mannequin to take home. He used it to masturbate with and sleep next to, mildly fulfilling his desire to be with a corpse. His grandmother and aunt discovered it in his closet and asked him to get rid of it, which he did. Towards the end of 1985, and with a steady income, Dahmer became a frequent guest at multiple bathhouses, where he had many sexual encounters with willing participants. He expressed how the independent movement of their bodies during sex made him uncomfortable, and how he had wished they would let him do whatever he wanted to do with them. By the summer of 1986, he was drugging his dates to fulfill this desire, date raping multiple men before complaints against him stacked up and his membership was terminated. Colleagues at the Ambrosia Chocolate Factory described Dahmer as a quiet person who kept to himself and only answered direct questions with short sentences. He brought his own lunch, which was most likely made by his grandmother, and was often found sleeping on the job, for which he received multiple warnings. He murdered 16 people between 1987 and 1991, and often on or just before the weekend, where he had a night off to enjoy the corpses. If victims were murdered during the week, he kept their bodies on ice in his bathtub, returning from work for a cold shower and necrophiliac pleasure. The decapitated head of victim number 5, Anthony Sears, was kept in a carry case in his work locker, wrapped in a blanket for 10 months while he was on work release at the House of Corrections. He told the FBI that at one point, police searched his locker and found the skull, but because he had painted it, had assumed it was fake. On July 13, 1991, he was fired for chronic absenteeism, and within a week he had killed his 17th and final victim, Joseph Braderhoft. When detectives questioned him about what his next move would have been if he had not gotten caught, particularly because he had just lost his job and therefore his income, he told them that he knew that he would have had to vacate his apartment for non-payment within a few weeks or months, and had decided that he would need to destroy all of the evidence of what he had done, including the skulls that he planned to turn into a shrine. He had planned to buy another barrel and fill it with muriatic acid to dissolve all the remains and flush it down the drain before he would have to vacate the apartment. He told them that he was thinking about going to the Salvation Army while he was looking for another job, and that once he was back on his feet, believed that he would have started killing all over again because it was such a powerful compulsion and desire.